Howdy ho, Dieter and Jake on a Tuesday. It's Chiefs week for the San Francisco 49ers, a game that I think everybody's been looking forward to one way or another since the end of the Super Bowl. Makes sense to me. And a lot to break down from last Thursday still. A lot to look forward to with both the Chiefs and the Cowboys coming back-to-back weeks. Cowboys looking great, by the way. They're nailing it. Good job, everybody. Not at all in a state of chaos. Haven't even looked at who they're playing this week. Kind of feel bad for them. Regardless.
Yep.
Jake, how are you feeling about the Niners 1.5-point favorites going into this game? 3-3, technically atop the NFC West. Not that that really matters at this juncture.
Right.
Like, as it stands, I know that you missed a little bit of the ebb and flow when you were in Japan. Eh. Good choice, by the way. But now that you got your boots back on the ground, you're fully you're back in America, baby. How are you feeling about the 49ers at this juncture?
I'm feeling weirdly optimistic about them. That was not something I would say I felt. And that's not to say like I was impressed with what they did Thursday night. Like the first half was pretty good, but they keep coming up short in the red zone. I'm still not impressed with how that's going. But gut feeling is they at least go 1-1 down this stretch. Probably, I mean, if they beat the Chiefs, I think they're going to beat the Cowboys. I think either way, they're going to beat the Cowboys. That's been my stance since the season started.
Okay.
I think this would be weirdly
optimistic. Like, so walk me through the expectation versus the reality of weirdly optimistic. Yeah.
I think the little bit of time off for the Seahawks game is going to help them. I think it's going to especially help Kyle sort of figure out what's going wrong a little bit in the red zone. You know, they're going to know that it's going to be man coverage a lot. I mean, I know they don't have Legarius Sneed anymore, but, you know, Spags is going to throw the boat at him. So weirdly optimistic in the sense that I think they're still not quite right. I think there's a couple things not clicking. We talked about the defense. I think the defense is going to take time to round into shape. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they're in it. They avoided their season collapsing. Purdy played a little better. I mean, a lot better than against the Cardinals. I think Ayuk's playing well. Debo played really well last week.
You thought so? I'm not sure. We brought it up on Friday. I think he was utilized better. I'm not sure he played
better. He had more effort. Even on a clear out route where he was just hauling. Some of those times he just doesn't go for it, and he did.
True.
So to me, that's like a little bit of buy-in. Mm-hmm. Kittle looks good. I still don't trust this offensive line. I think the biggest thing I'm looking for is like Chris Jones against the interior of this offensive line. So I'm not saying I have like a gut feeling yet about this game, but like on the sort of big scale for this team, big picture, I would say like optimistic, cautiously optimistic.
If they lose this game, does that optimism dwindle? Obviously, the circumstances of losing the game is one thing. If they get their ass kicked by the Chiefs versus losing by a point on a last-second field goal or something, circumstances matter. But it does feel like this season, yes, saved by beating Seattle, but it still feels like it's on the edge, no? Like,
yeah.
You cannot have a Cowboys Sunday night football game as optimistic as you might be, as certain as you might be that they're going to win that game because of history and the Cowboys and all this stuff. Like, there's every reason to believe the Niners win that game. Still, if they lose to the Chiefs, it's a game that's been circled on the calendar. It's one of those, you go back to the Jason Kelce quote, we were 10-1 and everyone was miserable. Like, it feels like this game, not to put too much on it, because I don't think that much needs to ride on it, but there does feel like the possibility, if not the certainty, that things get really rough really fast if they can't put out a good performance against Kansas City, because now baseline confidence has to be dinged. Not to extrapolate this thing too far, but it does feel like a lot is still on the line going into Sunday's game.
I'm with you. And I think there is something to the fact that it's been a decade since the Niners beat the Chiefs.
2014, and Dwayne Bowe, baby.
Right. And to me, everything about how they sort of structured this team going into the season was about beating the Chiefs. And it sort of has to be. You have to assume that, okay, we do all this right and we get to the Super Bowl again, it's going to be Kansas City. And that just has to be your assumption. And so I think they drafted Ricky Pearsall for that reason. They bumped up their corner. They picked up Dominic Pooney to replace Spencer Burford because the right guard spot cost them in two key situations in the Super Bowl. And so you set up, right? You build this team where you're like, okay, we're going to get over the hump. And as much as like a loss, I think would not matter in terms of, I mean, it would matter obviously in terms of the standings, but like if they lose, say it's any team, it doesn't really matter. But if they lose to the Chiefs, there's a real genuine emotional gut punch to that of like, are we actually ever going to be able to beat them? And that's a question that I think will sort of be rattling around your head where you're like, can we ever beat Mahomes? Is this thing that's just going to haunt us where we drafted Solomon Thomas and didn't ever consider drafting Mahomes? And I
think there's a lot going on there. But by the way, they're not the only team in the NFL that has to wonder if they can ever beat this Mahomes guy. But
there's one of the most haunted by it.
No doubt. Well, two Super Bowl losses will do that. And you know, say what you will about like the Bengals, or at least Burrow's beaten them once. Like there is this.
It's true.
You only get so many shots at this guy, and this is one that you probably have to take. And it's one that, let's be real, you're just flipping a coin. The Niners are a 1.5 favorite at home. I don't know where the coefficient is currently on home field advantage in the NFL, much less home field advantage for the San Francisco 49ers. It used to be three.
On a 1 p.m. game, by the way, which, why do they do that? The last time they've played them in the regular season, it's always been like an afternoon game.
Oh, I can tell you why. Fox paid the big bucks. They wanted this one because it's Brady and Burkhart, and they wanted this to be the national game of the week, and they went all in. This, I think, was their first pick in the secretive. I would love to be in this room. My God, I would love to be on the conference call. The draft, and they have to pay off, and you know, it's why you end up with like a Minnesota New Orleans game on CBS in like week 9 for no good reason, because the draft happened. And home game NFC, I think Fox had dibs on it, and I think that they claimed dibs on it early. I haven't looked to see what the they have a double Monday night game, which I'm sick of. But I don't know who Sunday Night Football is next week. It's probably a Giants or a Jets team, just a guess. And yeah, I think Fox went all in on this one, as sort of by now Tom Brady's going to have a little bit under his belt. It's been rough.
Right.
We could talk about that after the game because everyone's going to be on the up. If we're doing predictions, the Tom Brady, let's humanize Tom Brady campaign, it's failed miserably. They got to stop. It's embarrassing at this juncture. It's bad. Just go be the Raiders director of football personnel and whatever.
Do you think he's been coached on where every play he goes, whoa, whoa, like he's like yelling, like
got the robo.
Do you think anyone is like coming to him and be, yeah, like is somebody telling him not to do that? Or are they telling him, oh, it's good. It's like him, or is no one talking to him at all?
I think there's a lot of people talking to him. I think he's overcoached. I think the issue is that Tom Brady is not an engaging human. He's not. He's robotic and methodical and unquestionably the greatest quarterback of all time. And I think that he's a pretty normal dude who you could absolutely get along. Well, not anymore because he's transcended to beyond. But like at his best, he's a normal dude who's just not that interesting. He just isn't. Like, he's just a regular guy, and he doesn't have the kind of personality that lends itself to the bombast that you kind of need to be a really good analyst. And he's not providing the sort of deep cut analysis that frankly would counteract not having a winning personality in that regard. And when I listen to his analysis, it's just really boring, and it's kind of obvious. And what's looming over my head when I listen to him, not that I've gotten every game or anything, and certainly his first game with the Browns was brutal. I don't think he's gotten a non-blowout game yet, which is something. Perhaps that changes, perhaps it doesn't. Who's to say? But his analysis seems to just be Tom Brady story time, and I could give a fuck.
I'm with you.
And it's not interesting. Yeah. Have you seen his YouTube videos?
I saw the most recent one, and I couldn't. I actually couldn't get through it. I saw it's like cringy. 20 seconds. It was tough. You're right. He's made too much money, and he's too successful to possibly be relatable on any
too
human
divorced,
level. And also
too methodical. It's bad.
By the way, the Sunday Night Football game is Jets Steelers.
There you go. Hey, heaven forbid we don't get a New York football team on a national broadcast.
Desperately trading for Davante Adams. Just sure, that'll fix.
Did you see Aaron Rodgers did his hit with McAfee? This was about 10 minutes before we went on. Nothing. I don't care what he says on that. But he just Davante Adams just walks in behind him. And it was like, you know what? Well played. Well played. That's pretty good. I feel bad for Alan Lazard, who was having a revolutionary season. The Alan Lazard,
Mike Williams. They're gonna keep Lazard out there. He's a Rodgers guy.
Yeah, I mean, but now he's not the hot route on those free plays or anything. Like Devontae got what he wanted. I don't know what the Raiders are doing, man. Doesn't matter to me. Let's pull it back to something that we can get in on. I don't think the Brady experiment's gone very well, personally. Again, when he's doing these YouTube videos being like, I'm just a regular guy. Let me get on my private jet and go to the Olympics and sit in VIP. It's like, that's not, it's very Alex Rodriguez like. And I worked with A-Rod at Fox Sports, and he's just not a person. He's not a person. And so he's trying to chat GPT his way into passing the Turing test. And it's just like, dude, honestly, if you were to just embrace not being a person anymore, it might work out better for you. But this whole I'm just a normal guy. I just love football.
Right. Don't try and be a normal guy.
No, you're Tom fucking Brady.
Right.
And
right.
Say what you will about Belichick, but Belichick doesn't have that energy because Belichick is just still being himself and he's everywhere. Yeah. But Belichick's also providing like crazy depth and insight and is just this football encyclopedia. And Tom, logically, is really only an encyclopedia of the football that he's played, which is valuable information, but it doesn't do anything for me when I'm watching the Chiefs and the 49ers. Like, I don't care. And you can just tell that they're forcing it for 30-something million dollars a year. It's brutal.
Yeah, I'm predicting a lot of stories about, you know, when I played Mahomes in the Super Bowl and I talked to Mahomes and, you know, we had a lot of and then him talking about Brock Purdy beating him. It's going to be a lot of that. And I think he also is limited on, like, they told him not to predict plays and certain stuff. So that makes it where he's like trying to do this math in his head of what he can and can't say, which is like, that's what happens when you try and be an owner and, a broadcaster and all this stuff. And you can't
criticize officials. He has to be careful on who he criticizes. He's not in production meetings and it's just, it's not good. And it makes you miss Greg Olson. And it's like, Tom, just go be an owner of the Raiders. Be
Greg
the face.
Greg Olson's so great.
He is great because Greg Olson didn't give a fuck because he went out. He's prepared. He knows the details. Yeah. He gives you a perspective that's different. There's so many quarterbacks out there. That's cool. I would love a corner in there. I would love a tight end in there. I'd love somebody who has to think about the run game and the pass game. And I want more diversity and thought in the booth. And Greg did a great job of bringing that across the board. Regardless, it just hasn't gone well. I think that this, though, you know, Fox had been gearing up week 7. Oh, Tom will have it figured out by then. I think that anyone who's not in the stadium on Sunday is going to find out it ain't happening. And that's a bad bet for Fox. But the A-Rod thing looms large. I mean,
I'm with you. There's just that you've achieved too much and you can't come back down. It's like when a comedian gets too rich and tries to do like
it's the Ellen DeGeneres stand-up special.
Right?
Did you watch that?
So no.
No, dude. Okay, so I'm not like the biggest like old school, but I love stand-up comedy. And she got how many tens of millions of dollars, if not hundreds of million dollars, from Netflix to do a special. This was after or just before it all came crashing down. And her first 10 jokes are like, "I'm so rich," and everyone's like, "Oh, it was just no." It did not resonate at all with people, and. That's the kind of energy I get. So it's so fun that you brought it up. Exactly. That's what you guys get to experience. We get to experience football.
That's right. That's right. And I guess the number one thing going into this game, because I mentioned it, like, you know, the whole thing has been based around, you know, preparing for the Chiefs.
Right.
Will Ricky Pearsall play? Kyle Shanahan made it sound like no. Everyone I've talked to sounds like no, but I'm also like, if he's ready. Like, I'd love to see him out there. And maybe you just don't want that.
Yeah.
First game of the season. Maybe give him until the bye. Maybe you let him play against the Cowboys. I don't know what their plan is. But I sure would love to see him out there. And the amount of juice that they got from practice, like Purdy was like laughing in the locker room yesterday, just like big smile on his face. Because I think Barrows was asking him, like, you know, Pearsall back out there. And he's like, basically, Ricky's running full speed. Everyone else, it's like a mid-season practice. It's a bonus practice. You're just trying to like survive, get your body back going. And Pearsall's just going 100%.
That's awesome.
And I'm just like, I don't know. It depends on a lot of things. I'm not going to speculate again, but like, if he's ready, man, he can change your offense.
Some snaps, right? Like, you got to give him some run.
Right. I would love to see him out there. We'll see. We'll see. But I just think, again, I've made my point. I've written my column. He can fundamentally change his offense, and that's why you drafted him. You put him in for Debo, move Debo into the backfield and bump him out and do whatever you want to do. And he can take some of those jet sweep stuff. Like, he can take a handoff and just to mix it up and change how defenses are accounting for players. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, if he's ready, like, you know, let him go. But maybe, again, they're going to make the decision where if he's ready, he's ready. But
there was a snap against the Seahawks. And then I was it Seahawks or was it Arizona? Regardless, they went into, I think it was even 10 personnel. Mm-hmm. And they had Conley and Bell on the field at the same time. And it's like, if you're a defense, you're like, I guess just keep the linebacker out there. You know, we can roll with the safety. You don't have to switch anything. Just having a guy like Ricky Pearsall out there as a threat, just as a body, in if you're going to go into 10 personnel or if you're going to go into 01 personnel, like if you're going to do that, that's a big deal. That's just some. It's a threat that didn't exist previously because the drop off from wide receiver 3 to wide receiver 4 has been so significant for this team, to where Cowan can't get the run. Conley is a very good player, but no one's treating him like a true threat, which worked out to their benefit in the playoffs, but clearly is not something you can rely on week in and week out. And then Bell, well, we saw what happened. And I don't know how Brock can have the – he can say all the right things. I don't know how he can throw the football his way, even if he's wide open again. He's missing Brandon Ayuk, who's wide open all the time. Why would you look 10's way if he's the one who's open? So I'm with you 100%. It's not our call. It's ultimately not even it's Ricky Pearsall's call. There's a lot going into that.
Yeah.
We'll never get the full details. We're not going to talk to Ricky until after he plays a game. That might not be until a week from now or beyond. So
yeah, it could be after the bye week, but we'll see.
It's something to keep in mind though, because it is, he was, as you've noted a million times, and it needs to be reiterated again, he's been brought in for a reason, and that reason is right in your face on Sunday at 1:25. Everybody's been ripping off the Kansas City Chiefs. Nobody does the Kansas City Chiefs defense better than the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't care if L'Jarius Sneed is out there or not. So, huge game. What are your concerns for the 49ers going into this one, and why is it the interior of the offensive line against Chris Jones?
Yeah, I said it before. That's number one. Aaron Banks has not looked good. Brendel has not looked good. He's looked better than at the start of the season, but not good, especially in pass protection. He's looked much better in the run game. Mm-hmm. Dominic Pooney has been really good all year, but like I saw last couple games that he's looked a little bit more vulnerable in pass protection and letting guys turn him. He usually recovers really well, but sometimes that means Purdy's after he's recovered, he's preventing the sack, but he's already allowed the pressure.
Right.
He's really good, but that is the most exploitable part of this team. I mean, it's pretty clear.
Knew that
and
coming.
Chris Jones blew them up on two key plays. One where Brock had a touchdown to Debo in the Super Bowl, and another one where he probably would have gotten another touchdown.
Yeah.
And Chris Jones was unaccounted for. So I think, you know, if you're Chris Foerster and you're Kyle Shanahan, get a plan for that guy. Get a plan for McDuffie.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's some other pieces they have. I really like Reed. They've got a lot of different guys. They mix in, you know, they basically got like six linebackers who are all of the sort of same caliber, that sort of play randomly all over the place.
I mean, there's one that's better than everybody. 32,
right? But I'm just saying they mix in a lot of guys.
Bolton is a very interesting player for me in this game, because there's a lot of ways in which you can get, and MIZ, Nick Bolton, like I'll cop to it. I'm biased towards him. But Bolton is gettable. Like, there's a reason that I wasn't high on Bolton when he was coming out of Mizzou.
Right.
As like a day one or early day two pick, which is I don't like his mobility, particularly going backwards in the pass game. Like, he's just not a coverage guy. He's kind of a classic middle linebacker. He gets side to side like nobody's business. He splits gaps as well as anybody. He is a monster against outside zone. If you don't get to that second level fast, he will get you every single time. He will blow it up. We see it with Fred Warner week in, week out. This is one of the few other linebackers in football who can do the same thing. That said, you can get him spinning. Like, the difference between a Fred and a Nick Bolton is dramatic, because Fred cannot be schemed into looking like a top. He cannot, he does not get fooled when you go play action boot. He is perfect with his hips and his eyes and everything that goes into a lot of teams' offensive game plans, trying to get linebackers into the strange no man's land that exists typically in play action. Kansas City's certainly going to do that, not from under center, but from that outside zone run to the left or to the right, opposite of where the running back is. They're going to run a lot of inside zone as well.
Yeah.
But, man, I feel like this is a definitive Kyle game. Like, we're going to find out. We've both stated we've been underwhelmed by Kyle this year. There have been moments where it has been awesome. There have been a lot of moments where it feels like he doesn't have the answers to the test.
I liked what he went back to against Seattle. And it was stuff we talked about, of simplifying the offense, play action, and he realized it. I mean, it was clear, and he went back to some of that stuff.
But you're going up against 17 for Seattle. It's a very different ball game than going up against 32 for Kansas City here.
Correct.
And I'm just fascinated to see with Drew Tranquil, with Nick Bolton.
Chennault.
Yep. It's an opportunity, but it needs to bring out Kyle's best, right?
Yeah.
It's not like you can't do anything against it. You can absolutely do something against him, but you got to earn it. You got to earn it against these guys. And if you're not fooling them, they are going to be in the backfield blowing up your run game. Whether it's Jordan Mason, you don't have Christian McCaffrey. So you're running outside zone. You're running, you know, maybe some counter stuff,
yep.
But like, they're not going to get fooled on the run stuff. They'll get fooled on the pass stuff. You got to earn it. You got to have the full complement of conflict inducing play action passes to your game plan. And I'm with you. I mean, we talked about it ad nauseum. We won't bring it up anymore. But this is where the basics really pan out. And this is where Brock Purdy, playing to Shanahan's offense as opposed to playing to his maybe preferred skill set, is going to be huge. I almost want to see less from Brock in this game.
Yeah.
Because I think less can be more scheme-wise. Of course, then that puts a lot on the wide receivers, and we'll see how all of that goes. This is why Kansas City is such a difficult team to play against. They're very well coordinated. They're very sound on the thing that matters most, stopping the run. They are going to be in good position to stop the run. Might be able to burn them over the top, but they're going to force you into a lot of positions that make you uncomfortable, and they'll get the upper hand in a lot of them.
It is wild that this team has evolved where it was just this behemoth offense, and now it's like they just lean on their defense monumentally, because the offense is, you know, all of their weapons are hurt. They've got Worthy and Kelsey.
Yep.
You know, and that's
Justin
kind of
Watson.
It. Yeah, and what's funny is, you know, we talked about Kingsley Suamati in the draft. They benched him for Wanya Morris, who's not good.
All
and right. And meanwhile, he like might be better than Juwan Taylor, who is a terrible offensive tackle, but that doesn't really matter in the playoffs because you're allowed to hold and you're allowed to false start in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Which is just a fact of life.
Totally. Week 7, though. Let's flip it the other way here, because this should also be noted.
Yeah.
49ers have had some real issues on the interior of the defensive line. We know that, right? Hargrave's out. He was a question mark before he went out. Collins is giving you the Hargrave where he's been awesome in the first half, totally dominant, throwing dudes around. You're looking at its highlight tape. And then in the second half, you're like, remember Malik Collins? Whatever happened to him? Is he injured? Yep. Oh, no, he's still playing. He just loses steam. It's how it goes. You're in the interior. You're the only guy that they trust on the interior to play snap after snap. You're going to wear down. He should be in a system where he's part of a rotation. He's not. I don't know how you fix that in the short term, if it can be fixed at all. The interior of the Chiefs' offensive line, guard, center, guard, it's the best in the league. They got Thuney. They got Trey Smith, someone that you and I talked about when we were doing the, you know, draft stuff, where it's like, I know that he has, it was either sickle cell or a blood issue. I apologize for not remembering specifically. When he was coming out of school, they're like, it's dealt with. It's fine. He's coming out of Tennessee. It's been, they have it. There's a plan. Everything's okay. And every other team, in the, he was a second round prospect through and through. This is a guy you take early in day two. He was the best or second best guard. And everyone's like, I don't know about the blood thing.
Round six.
And Kansas City's like, fuck it, we'll find out. And what's happened? He's one of the best guards in football. And then Creed Humphrey, who, if you've listened to this show for more, I mean, I think I bring up Creed Humphrey in every goddamn show. He's so goddamn good. And he was sitting there for the Chiefs. It was so obvious that that's the guy
sitting there for the 49ers, and they took Banks over him, which I don't care how much you like Aaron Banks. It's Creed Humphrey is an all pro player.
He is,
and you and I know they had Alex Mack at the time, whatever, you could have put him at guard. Like, there's really, it was a pretty clear thing that we pointed out at the time. And
I don't want to, you know, we've been wrong on plenty of things. We're never going to forgive on Creed Humphrey, because we were so, I mean, pounding the table is an understatement. We were jumping up and down on the floor. This is the guy, this is the guy, this is the guy. And they didn't end up taking him. And he's the best center in the league, in my estimation. And by the way, one of the few players on the offensive line, Trent Williams, maybe 2023 edition, because it hasn't turned that way yet this year, though it's getting better, much better, and he's still very, very good. Creed Humphrey is one of the few offensive line players in the league that is worth watching.
Yeah.
Right? You think about how many shitty offensive linemen there are in the NFL. There are more than ever. This guy, if you're watching the Chiefs, take your eyes off Mahomes, watch the dude who is snapping him the ball. He is incredible, and it's a challenge that obviously the 49ers haven't faced yet with that interior defensive line. That's a big issue for me. So you're going
huge issue. I think what it sets up is Mahomes went from this guy who's hucking at every play to, over the last few years, just taking check down, short pass,
a lot of cover two, right?
You know, right. But I mean, he's just taking what's there. He's taken 6 yard pass plays, which is like cover two, Tampa two. The idea is keep everything in front of you, and teams are going to get bored and they're not going to want to nickel and dime you down the field the whole way, and we'll stop you. Or at the very least, we'll give up a field goal, not a touchdown.
Right.
And Holmes is saying, I will take every single yard you give me. And that sets up for a tired defense where then, listen, I think Pacheco's still out, but Kareem Hunt is a physical back, and it sets up for a second half where, like, that interior offensive line is just meat grinding you into a pulp because the defense has been nickeled and dimed down the field and is pretty tired.
I'm with you 100% on that. There's also the element, I mean, listen, the outside is just as bad as the inside is good. So if Leonard Floyd ever wanted to have a game for the San Francisco 49ers, have I got one for you. If Nick Bosa wanted to start tackling, now Bosa's been incredible, but I think he'll have a very similar performance to the game he had in Seattle. I'm not sure that tilted the tables one way or another. It was a very good game.
I disagree. I disagree. He forced that interception and prevented a touchdown. I think he did affect the game a lot, but like, there were plenty of times where he was right there and didn't get him.
Right. He has a we before the show, we were going over PFF grades and how we're in general disagreement with a lot of them. I will say this one seems accurate. Nick Bosa has a 91.3 defensive rating this year. I think we all agree Nick Bosa has been pretty fucking sick. He has a 29 out of 100 tackling grade. 29. It's lowest on the team. And no, that's not true. That's not true. Demetrius Flanagan Fowles has a lower one. That's what we're talking about. Malik Collins, 30. I mean, there is something to be said for the soundness of the Kansas City offense and the Kansas City defense and how boom or bust everything has been for both sides of the ball for the 49ers. That's concerning to me.
What I will say, and this is just going to be, I'm doing it. I'm going to Sam Okwuonu corner.
Wonderful.
I'm not saying this is going to fundamentally change the game, but we mentioned Okwuonu before.
Yes.
Right?
Last couple of weeks, we've been very
impressed. It was like the Patriots game was like his breakout, right? And he was really impressive, and he forced that fumble. And he's looked great. I did some digging just like on advanced stats just to see where some guys are. And it's like a very small sample size. You know, Okwuanu only has about 53 pass rush plays. And, you know, he hasn't been out there all that much. He's only been in run defense a few times. But he's in this play, he's over. He gets, you know, they put Pharaoh Brown on him on the right side. And he just collapses that right side.
Yeah.
Just easily. And this is in the run game.
Straight bull rush.
Right. And this is in the run game. And so the thing about him is, like, he's so stout. I think they have a situation where, you know, we talked to Nick Bosa a couple weeks ago, and Bosa was sort of talking about some of the guys that didn't get it. I think you talked to him. Some of the guys that didn't get it, some of the guys that did get it. And he mentioned Charles Omenihu, a guy who went to Kansas City and who, like, really was a massive, massive player for them. It didn't show up a lot every game, but, like, his pressure rates were, like, top 15 in the league consistently. This is Okwuanu, again, against the Patriots, which shouldn't really count because the Patriots offense.
Again, their tackles are as bad as Kansas City's.
It's true. It's true. And this is him just easy swipe move with the hands, gets right to Brissett. He beat Lenore on that one. But Okwuanu, I was watching the tape. I watched every single snap Okwuanu has had last year. Thanks, NFL Pro, for fixing your system.
Big ups.
Okwuanu currently is 18th in the league in pressure rate. He's 39th in win rate, which is like so pressures. Sometimes you get pressures just from play going on too long. We'll see how that bears out. It's not as great in true pass sets, but in true pass sets, he's like been productive. He's been really productive game in and game out in pass rush. That's just like 18th in pressure rate. Take that. Run defense. He's got the 11th best run defense grade in the league. He's got the third best stop percentage in the league at 14.3%. And his average tackle depth on run plays is a half a yard behind the line of scrimmage. So he's just doing it all. And you watch him on tape, and he's setting the edge in a way that 49ers have not been able to do. And I think that's something that's really worth noting. He's got a power rush that sets it up, and then he's got a counter that he just stole explicitly from Nick Bosa with a swipe move. Like, I asked him about it, and he was like giggling. He's like, yeah, I basically ripped that off from Bosa. And he's like getting advice from Bosa week in and week out. And he's a guy that has like really good athleticism, but because he was like a JUCO guy who didn't produce that well at Maryland, and then he was undrafted, 49ers sort of snuck him through, and we saw flashes in training camp. Like, this guy's a player. This guy's actually a player. We'll see how he develops throughout the year, but I think they might have a real guy here that can fundamentally help them, you know, especially with Yetur Gross-Matos comes back. They've got like an edge player there that can play in both ways, and that's really important, and they got him for free.
You mentioned Omenihu. He is 8 months post-op on his knee, I think as of today.
Yep.
They're coming off a bye. I don't think he'll play. I'm not certain he won't, though. I'm not. And that's a huge deal for the Chiefs if he is able to just give some snaps because of all the reasons you said, all the reasons that we know from having watched him. They have not replaced him, full stop, in years. And maybe Sam O is the replacement. He has not gotten the reps yet that give you the indication that they're all the way in.
And these there's like been 90 snaps.
There's some miss, but the hit is really good, and he sets the edge consistently. Not perfectly. Seattle, he had a couple of lapses, but before that, he was 2 for 2 on perfect games for setting the edge, at least by my eyes.
He doesn't get washed out. You see so many times over these last few years where you've just had a 49ers defensive end who's just, he either like tries to jump inside and then they out leverage him and he gets cleared out. Okwuanu, I saw multiple times where he would set the edge and he changed where Kenneth Walker had to go because he would, if he was going to try and bounce it outside, Okwuanu would flash that way because he had the left tackle or the tight end right in his hands. And I'm telling you, there's something to that guy. And it wasn't just that one flash in the pan against the Patriots. And he plays with swagger. Like, I know that like shouldn't really matter, but for a guy who was like a practice squad guy undrafted, like he's like sort of pump faking at the line, like sort of a la Myles Garrett. Mm-hmm. He just looks like a guy who's really confident in himself.
That's the right word, right? You can't play with swagger unless you're confident in yourself. And the only way to pull off a random spin move that you haven't tried yet in a game and we've never really even seen right. you practice is to feel like you have something on the other team, to feel like, hey, I'm winning. I'm winning consistently. Let's get weird. I have some leverage and leeway to try something new here. And by the way, I'll still be sound, right? There's guys yep. who go out there and are just Jordan Poole in it, right? It's like, you don't have the basics down, my man. You can't be trying all this shit. He's got the basics down. And they can always pull back to that. But now he's trying to augment it. It's a lot like what we were saying with the 49ers offense. Let's get back to basics here. And if you want to add to basics, that's fine. But they were so far away from their fundamentals when it comes to the offense and the scheme that 9 out of 10 players, and I guess 10 out of 11 players on that offense are built to play, they didn't have an identity. They were just kind of, yeah. oh, I hope Fred wins on defense. I hope Brock wins on offense. That's not an identity. That's a wish and a prayer. That's very Seahawks, Russell Wilson. 9-8 is what that gets you at its best. And that's with Russ playing or Brock playing at the level right. that they're playing at. Because, again, they are now one and the same. I do want to mention one more thing before we get out of here. Special teams, we know, has not been good for the 49ers. Special teams is always good for the Chiefs. Funny how that works. The Chiefs have a distinct kicking advantage going into this game. I think they have as good as yep. Wisnowski has been. They have a distinct punting advantage with Matt Araiza in this game as well. Special teams. I know it's not a sexy topic unless people just want to bash it, but man, like the Niners are going to be probably on their third kicker in 3 weeks.
Yeah. Matthew Wright was not seen yesterday. Like, I have no idea if he's going to practice. I mean, it's a shoulder injury, so maybe they just say who cares, but
Anders Carlson is in. He's on the practice squad now. You might remember him from missing critical field goals for the Green Bay Packers. So that there's that. You have a new kicker, one that has been sitting around for the last couple of weeks. You have a pretty distinct special teams disadvantage here. Even just in kick returns and stuff, right? They have Mecole Hardman back there. That's a big deal. So
yeah,
I know that, you know, it's not the sexiest topic of conversation, but Kansas City, if anyone's thinking that Kansas City is a lesser version or a paper tiger of any sort, like, I assure you, they are not. They have just not maximized their potential quite yet. And yes, you might say, oh, their wide receivers.
Yeah,
they're 5-0.
They're
Patriotsing you.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're back to Tom Brady.
They feel inevitable every year. You know, like regardless of how well they play.
Andy Reid is 32-6 coming off of bye weeks in his career. That includes playoffs and Super Bowls. 32.
By the way, my slight optimism did not mean I think the 49ers will necessarily win this game. I'm with you. I think it's a toss-up. We'll preview it more in detail.
Yeah, we'll get into the real nitty-gritty.
But it's like if they can't get the monkey off their back against this Chiefs team.
A lot of emotion riding.
I guess if they don't do it with it, if like they don't have Pearsall and they don't have McCaffrey and both those guys come back, you could be like, all right, well, they didn't have those guys. But wouldn't it be more meaningful to do it without them now?
And it would mean something. To be sure. And it's one of those things where, again, if they win or lose, it doesn't change fundamentally their season when it comes to record.
Right.
But it just changed the resonance and the timber of it all. If they win,
it's like, are we supposed to take them seriously? Or
it's not even that. I don't even think it's an external thing. I think it's a totally internal thing. If they win this game, they're going to be riding high to the point where we're going to be like, oh, shit, they might lose to the Cowboys. But there's going to be
right.
a little bit of cachet. They're going to have, going back to the Sam O, they're going to have some confidence, right? They're going to be able to feel good about themselves. Hey, okay, we're back. It wasn't that great, you know, beginning of the season. We treated it like preseason, but we're here. We're ready to go. We're still the favorites in the NFC. Come try us. There's that. And if they lose, now we're right back to where we were going into that Seattle game.
Right.
To where it's like any game could complete. And now every injury feels monumental and every, you know, bad play feels like, is this the end? And you just can't live like that. You cannot live like all the way to the end unless you're the Kansas City Chiefs, where they have so much confidence that they're like, we do not care if we win 3-0 every game. We will be there in the end. We will ramp it all up. You know, they're playing very Warriors circa 2017 basketball, where they're like, yeah, every now and again, we'll turn it on. But most of the time, we'll just go about our business and win however many games we win. And maybe we have the bye. Maybe it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Because come January and February, we're going to be there because we're the goddamn Kansas City Chiefs. And the 49ers are not in that position. They haven't been. They should have never thought they were in that position. But they've never been in that position at any point this season, save for maybe post week one, which was a hell of an extrapolation. As soon as they lost to Minnesota, it went right back to, oh boy, here we go, 2020. Even the McCaffrey before the fucking first game of the season made you feel like, oh boy, Super Bowl hangover, all this stuff. They can beat the hangover if they can beat the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Legitimately.
It matters. It matters.
So drink your liquid IVs, 49ers.
Get hydrated.
By the way, Jake, before we go, has any team had more fucking cramps in a season than the 49ers have had in the first 6 weeks? How many IVs are they giving mid-game?
Not Bosa. He doesn't take them. He's like, there's plenty of time to be hydrated.
All I do is I sit and drink water. A little bit concerned about whatever their Propel / Gatorade situation is. They might need to up the electrolytes a little bit. Just a thought from the outset. Okay. We're going to leave it there. We will preview the game in full to a level of detail that is excruciating come Friday. Plenty of stuff will break between now and then. We'll get into it all on Friday. We're thinking that's probably going to be the long one of the week. And Sunday. Looking forward to it, Jake. Good talking.